from the department, the CEO of NCR, and all the other officials, people from the media, they were all welcome to start our meeting now. Thanks to the department that we have made this day to honor the invitation. Mr. Kaskovadia, you can come this side on the left. Just come this side on the left. You know, because I'm chair here, you must come to the left and you must make it a point that you run. Come this side.
Mr. Chairman, I'm definitely not Mr. Kaskovadia.
Patel, Mr. Patel.
If you want me to cross the floor, I'll do it with pleasure.
Okay, Mr. Patel. Just come over this side. Thanks very much. Thanks for the correction. Morning, everybody. Morning, Makoshi. Morning, Makoshi. Okay. We'll have this was a long agreed date. Once the media is here, I want to thank them for covering this issue. You have been covering it, whether you cover it this way or that way, but just thanks for covering it. Something that we had to talk about. And I want to urge you to continue covering it. When I was in Brussels last week, on a flight coming back from home, as soon as I boarded, I saw a newspaper, it had this issue. So thanks very much just for covering it. And now you report everything in South Africa. Department, Mr. McDonald, Mr. Sanger, will give. Now let's be official. I'm Tumzani Kamede. I chair this meeting. I will introduce ourselves because there might be people that are not known.
Good morning. My name is Hlupheka Mdileni. I'm the committee secretary.
Good morning. I'm Abdullah Hanif. I'm the committee researcher.
Good morning. My name is Dave Abrams. I'm from Gauteng. Good morning. I'm Elza van Lingen from the Eastern Cape.
Good morning. I'm Mokolo Marina. I'm from the North Coast.
Morning. Jomo Nyambi from Mpumalanga Province.
Morning, Kenneth Sinclair, Northern Cape.
Good morning, Bafuna Nibuni, Free State.
Good morning, Matuba Godekhan, Limpopo Province.
Jump over to you and you.
Sorry, Linda Ince for Business Day. Thank you. Sal Jaffe, Ethical Political Consulting.
Arikunela of PMG.
Melissa Delanya from CBA.
Annalene Dipanoa, Career Bureau Association.
Nelly Brand Jonker from Saga 24.
Wahid Patel from Ethical Political Consulting.
John Nicolas, Polarity Consulting.
Adira Bodicine, Polarity Consulting.
Roger Schneider, DGI.
Morning, I'm McDonald's in Exchange from the DGI.
Good morning, Nomsa Mutakare, National Credit Regulator.
Good morning, Steve Mashaka, National Credit Regulator.
Obed Tomani, National Credit Regulator.
Stephen Logan, consultant to the National Credit Regulator.
Thanks very much. It's over to you, Mr. McDonald. And Mr. Mashapa, if you could switch off your mic.
Thanks, Chair, and the honorable members of the House and colleagues. My name is McDonald Nechitenje. I'm going to make a presentation here on behalf of the DTI. I'm the acting Deputy Director General, acting. I will not bore you with the background, since this is the second time that we're making this type of a presentation. But we hope this one is final, so the background is known. Here's the table of contents. It's the purpose, background, context, the primary aims of credit amnesty, and the methodology. The impact assessment, perceived least risk proposal. It means therefore there will be proposals, three of them. Then we'll be proposing maybe one, but the decision is not of the DTI. Perceived medium risk proposal, perceived high risk proposal, key recommendations, how the credit amnesty can be a success, and then there will be a conclusion. So, Chair, the purpose, therefore, is to present this study regarding the credit amnesty and to request the select committee to approve option one, recommendation, the legislative consideration, form of credit amnesty, the timeline, implementation, monitoring and evaluation. Then a short background is that the DTI was requested to look at the problem of credit impairment in relation to the previous credit amnesty that was resorted to in 2007 and 8. In this regard, the DTI superficially determined whether or not the previous credit amnesty was effective or achieved the intended purpose. So in reality, we could not come with a deep analysis that was sort of going to be presentable to the Honorable Committee. Because of that, without prejudging the above determination, the DTI requested the NCR to determine empirically issues that may alleviate credit impairment. We use the word deliberately empirically. Empirical. Yeah, okay. Empirical means, therefore, you come with facts and argue your case. Anecdotes come with I believe, I think. So therefore, we will encourage people to come with empirical facts. When we discuss, here we have empirical evidence. Not effect, not I think, I believe. You can be interrogated on that. Then there is consultation with relevant stakeholders in the industry that was held, people like the bank. An interim finding was presented to the select committee, and it was agreed that by February 2013, the study should have been finalized. The study was finalized February, March, and the DTI considered the report in March 2013. And therefore, below follows the discussion and possible recommendation. Context of credit amnesty. What I'm going to say as for now is not written there, but that's how we can paint a picture. there is a situation as follows, like a mine generally is a medium and long term. That the mine does not fall within the jurisdiction of the credit laws. I'm just giving an example. So owners or directors of the company, all of them generally may be rich people with cash, but it may be difficult to use their salaries to start this mine. So they have money, but that money generally is for basic necessities, like buying clothes, educating the children. What happens is that they will have to go to an institution like a bank and ask for a loan in order to invest in that mine. So therefore, access to a loan or to credit assists the country to allow business people to invest and the economy can grow. Without that loan, without that access, then there can be a problem. So salaries generally are not for investing in starting up the company. Having said that, I'm reading now in the presentation, a credit is a key enabling mechanism for investment and development. Take that example. So if the individual would like to progress, generally you don't use money from your salary. You request for a loan. And then if you have access to credit, the better, you will repay that loan. And then the rationale now is to say, if you do not have access to loan or credit, then there is a problem. The economy cannot move because people or businesses are impaired. But here, I'm talking within the context of the Credit Act. A failure to facilitate widespread access to credit often results in significant opportunity costs to enterprise premiums and the wider consumer. Credit spurs consumer spending, a key driver of economic growth. Inaccessible or expensive credit hinders growth. Access to a sustainable credit market is essential to all development goals. This clarifies that example that I gave in the mining sector. Then primary aims of credit amnesty, reducing credit impairment by addressing its causes, removing barriers to credit and assisting those consumers who can afford credit to access credit, embarking on a restorative justice, achieving the goals of the National Credit Act, assisting consumers impacted by economic recession, redressing failure of credit providers to consider broader economic sectors, removing barriers to employment, reducing overpricing, stimulating economic growth, broadening access to credit providers. So, in short, is that people who are to be assisted are individuals, probably as well as the credit lenders. It will become clear as we go on. The methodology used, identify the causes of credit impairment, consult with stakeholders, conduct impact assessment to determine scope of data removal. I'm repeating that, conduct impact assessment to determine scope of data removal, draft affordability assessment guidelines, conduct research on discretionary income, draft adverse listing rules, find means to incentivize repayment of debt, ascertain causes of high cost of credit. I can talk in detail on some of the issues. So stakeholders were consulted. Conduct impact assessment to determine scope of data removal. The issue is that when the banks, as an example, micro lenders, they need to give somebody a loan, they must conduct affordability assessment. In other words, if that person that you are intending to loan has got 100 rand, has got 100 rand, that is the salary, and then you give a loan, and that person, you found that he or she pays the basic necessities, is left with minus 10 rand, minus 10 rand. But you still give a loan to that person. So there is a problem there. The problem may be with the individual who gave incorrect information to the lending institution, or to the lending institution that recklessly proceeded in giving loan to that person. So therefore, in this regard, the individual is to be assisted because there should be affordability assessment guidelines. And also the bank, as an example, they must be assisted. By the way, if the bank falls, there is a problem. We don't want our bank to fall. But if there is a reckless lending, done by the bank, there can be a problem at a certain point because there is no repayment. At a certain point, the government may have to bail out that bank at the expense of the country, probably. We can debate. So there are perceived least risk proposal, call it option one. Removal of adverse information listing having a value equal to or less than 10,000 rand irrespective of non-payment. Two, removal of all paid up adverse information listing on an ongoing basis. Removal of all paid up judgments on an ongoing basis. Number of consumers impacted will be 1.5 million people. Those consumers will be positively impacted upon is 1.5. Note, this proposal will have the least adverse impact on credit providers' risk portfolio. Option two, removal of all adverse information listing, irrespective of value and irrespective of non-payment. Removal of all paid up adverse information listing on an ongoing basis. Removal of all paid up judgments on an ongoing basis. Number of consumers impacted upon 1.6 million. This proposal will result in a small increase in credit providers' risk portfolio and may result in smaller credit providers' closures and a decrease in the supply of credit. May I consult with my colleague? There is something that I noted, I want to address it.
Now I see that he's consulting without even getting permission to consult. But he continue consulting.
Profusely, apologize, Chair. Thanks. Now it seems I consulted. So option three is removal of all adverse information and judgment listing, irrespective of value and irrespective of non-payment. removal of all paid up adverse information listing on an ongoing basis, removal of all paid up judgments on an ongoing basis, number of consumers impacted upon is 2.2 million. Impact on credit risk portfolios, no impact except of micro loans, increased by 1.3%, and it refers to the report. Note, this proposal will result in an increase in credit providers' risk portfolios and may result in smaller credit providers' closure and in a decrease in the supply of credit. So generally, option one, option two may sound similar, only to an extent that the first one is less or 10,000, equal to 10,000. The second one, no limit on the number. And therefore, the impact is virtually the same, 1.5 and 1.6 million. And the last one is to say whether there is payment. If the people should be removed from the bureau, even if they have not settled their debt. That's not what we are recommending. We are saying people should pay the debt. After paying the debt, then the judgment cycle okay. So therefore, after taking the debt, we are saying therefore remove such a person's personal information that is to the disadvantage of that person. And where there is no settlement of the debt, judgment, the name should remain. I think that is the moral of the story. So key recommendations, to proceed with a responsible amnesty by removing some credit information, that's number one. Two, keep up judgment and adverse information listing should be removed on an ongoing basis following payment of the underlying debt as is done in Brazil. Credit providers should be required to conduct more comprehensive affordability assessment. Credit providers should be required to use discretionary income guidelines. Credit providers should be required to prove that consumers have the discretionary income they claim. The NCR should continue to audit credit providers' affordability assessment on an ongoing basis. I'm informed that the affordability assessment guidelines are virtually completed. The NCR should prosecute all cases of reckless lending. In the papers, maybe 2 or 3 months ago, there were such referrals to the tribunal. Listing rules are required to ensure consumers are properly notified and given sufficient time to remedy the default. Credit literacy programs should include NCR materials both in credit retail outlets and elsewhere throughout the credit life cycle. In this regard, one may say the previous amnesty, people thought that because their names are removed, they can also be reckless and go for another alone. So therefore, here we are saying there is also a duty upon the NCR to go into education campaigns to educate people that the fact that now your name has been removed, it doesn't mean free for all. You go for loans that you won't be able to settle. Please do that responsibly. I think that's what we are saying here. Abuses such as collecting prescribed debt, inappropriate garnishee orders, and exorbitant credit life insurance should be prevented. The issue of garnishee orders, I think, is a problem. Because of this, we also consulted with the Department of Justice, because there is also the issue of the legislation dealing with debt and then your insolvency, with that falls in the Department of Justice. So they are also dealing with those issues. The issue of prescription. If within 3 years you are owing somebody and then there is no letter of demand to you, the debt prescribes. But some people will come and persuade you to say just pay 5 francs as an example, and you do that. Prescription comes to life again. I may repeat myself. Yes. Prescription means that, therefore, one, if you owe somebody and that person does not demand from you for a period of, say, 3 years, prescription runs. That debt dies, a natural death, because of the legislation. But after having died, then nobody should be demanding from you. However, what happens in practice, people will say, just pay a few rent, and then you do that, and then by so doing, you are reinstating the prescription then. It comes to life, and the debt is not cancelled because of that legislation. How can credit amnesty be a success? Let's consider now the legislative amendment. Do we have some proposal that can be done through an act of parliament? If the answer is yes, the DTI very soon will be coming to parliament to amend the National Credit Act. The National Credit Act. And therefore, if there is something that we are recommending, to say parliament enact a section in order to effect this amnesty, it will be better to put that section in that amendment that is on its way to this house or to this parliament, so that we have an enabling section. The rest can be done through regulation. So what we're saying is that let's consider legislative amendments for now. Legislative amendments should deal with ongoing removal of adverse information. The National Credit Act should be aligned with legislation that deal with debt collection. That is the Department of Justice and garnishee orders. What form credit amnesty should take? The minister should be empowered in terms of an act of parliament, as I said, and thereafter, when he is empowered, he should be able to issue regulations within the confines of the enabling section. That's what I was saying, in order to effect the credit amnesty process. We also have envisaged timelines to say a notice and procedure to follow should be drafted on credit amnesty for issuance by the minister, correctly empowered. Public should be consulted for 30 days on the notice. This process of consultation and issuance of the notice can start and finalize by June 2013 and September 2013 respectively. And then we go for implementation. Implementation of the notice may be effected on 1 October 2013, and thereafter you go for monitoring and evaluation, because there is a danger of just saying the act is passed, the notice is passed, but you find that you don't monitor and evaluate how things are working. Monitoring should commence immediately, and evaluation should happen on 31st March 2014, and the result, if any, should be implemented by April 2014. Okay, I'm concluding.
Honorable, sorry, Honorable Mine. No, continue. Sorry for that. Honorable Funding, I was just excited.
No problem. Conclusion? Before conclusion, so therefore, if the Act as it stands now enables the Minister to do that without amendment, it can be done. However, we are just cautioning that we should do everything within the law, within an Act, because if we don't do that, people can challenge those regulations and notices because they are not enabled. So we are just cautioning here. In conclusion, the Select Committee should consider the report and approve its recommendations as canvassed in the presentation. With those few words, Chair, that's the end of the presentation. But before I revert to you, I will request my colleagues if there are any issues to cement. Thanks.
CEO.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. My comment is that I think we should all remember that we have, out of the 19.6 million credit active consumers in South Africa, almost 50% of those consumers are over-indebted. They have impaired records, or they're considered to be impaired, meaning that they have, you know, accounts that are 3 and more months in arrears. They have judgments and address listings. And some of these consumers are consumers that find themselves in this situation because of circumstances beyond their control. We had a credit crisis. People have lost their jobs, and therefore, you know, they found that, you know, their accounts ran into arrears and they were not able to meet their financial obligations and ended up being, you know, blacklisted. Now, these are consumers who are prejudiced, you know, would be prejudiced if we don't go the credit, you know, amnesty route. We believe that they must be given a second chance, because we have a lot of instances where consumers were able to go, you know, after being retrenched, they found jobs, their circumstances have changed, they got a promotion in some instances, they were able to, you know, pay back, you know, their loans on a regular basis, but still, you know, they're prejudiced because they can't get any more credit. And I think we need to, you know, rectify the situation. I thank you.
Is there anyone else? Mr. Mashapa?
Thank you, Chairperson. The DTI and the NCR believes that the report and the recommendations that were tabled here today are very responsible. They have been empirically researched. And we have also commenced with the, we finalized the drafting of the affordability assessment guidelines, because we believe that it is one of the appropriate interventions that must come with the amnesty, but also over a long term, assist credit providers to ensure that we keep the incidence of reckless lending and borrowing. As we speak now, the guidelines are being tested. We are receiving written submissions. And we believe that together with the amnesty proposals, if these measures are implemented, they will in the long term reduce credit impairments. Thank you, Chair.
The consultant, you can say a word or two.
Thank you, Honourable Committee. It's a great privilege to be able to address the committee and those people here. My background is really an academic and practicing background as an attorney that has helped people who have been blacklisted for approximately 11 years. And I've assisted very many people have judgments rescinded at great cost to my financial benefit. And really I think that the NCR and the DTI have tried to, in this credit information amnesty, address the underlying causes of impairment. And they have, in that regard, looked at the listing rules, which need to be amended. They've looked at the length of time that adverse information is retained subsequent to payment of the debt, and realized that that actually is a disincentive for consumers. So consumers don't have a good incentive to settle debt because the adverse information remains on their credit record irrespective of payment. And they've tried to look at ways in which credit impairment can be reduced in the long run without negatively affecting credit risk portfolios of credit providers. And the intention is to make sure that the proposals that have been put on the table do not have a negative impact on all consumers of credit. Because consumers of credit are not all credit impaired, and we mustn't increase the cost of credit across the board by introducing something that would benefit, say, 1.5 million or 2 million consumers, because there are in total 19 odd million consumers that need to be looked after. So if I can just say that I think that of the three proposals, I know this is not a decision that is easy to make, but the least risky proposal, or the second least risky proposal, are to be preferred above the removal of judgments. Because in the impact assessment, what we found was that judgments are very good for predicting rare events, because they're not very common. But they are of huge value to credit providers, and the removal of judgments would only benefit a small number of people, but would be quite negative for the vast majority of consumers of credit in terms of what it would happen to credit pricing. Thank you, Chair.
Now that Mr. Patel is, I'll end up. Credit Providers Association, do you want to comment?
From our side, we just, lots of mention has been made about the affordability guidelines that have been published, I think, the 2nd of June for comments. And when it comes to the amnesty and the affordability guidelines, it seems as if the two will become counteractive, okay, or will work against each other, because the affordability guidelines, for example, says that a consumer, in order to qualify for credit, a consumer must have 25 or 30% of his disposable income available. Whereas the amnesty is saying, listen, let's promote access to credit, whereas the affordability guidelines actually restricts access to credit. So maybe it is because we don't really understand the interpretation of the guidelines and it needs to be a bit more clearer. But as it stands currently, there's a bit of confusion, and I think the two projects that the NCR and the DTI are busy with is actually going to clash, and it's counteractive, and on the end, I think maybe then amnesty is not, it's going to have no effect if the affordability guidelines go through as it is.
And your proposal to assist it not to clash would be?
Well, it's very difficult because it seems like the DTI used Brazil as a standard for the removal of, let's say, all adverse information, whereas Brazil, only their credit bureaus only hold negative information, whereas South Africa holds positive and negative information. So the model used by the NCR or the DTI is not applicable to the South African market. So it's difficult, I don't know, it's a bit all over the place. So there's no proposal at this point.
So, once more, I want to get it loud and clear. You have no alternative proposal?
Alternative proposal, well, we are in support of amnesty if it's been done. done in a responsible manner, which it seems like the NCR is attempting to do. And I think it just needs to be clearly thought through and not rushed. The timelines are very, very, very short, so I think more time is needed and it shouldn't just be rushed through.
Okay, thank you. We'll take that into consideration. Maybe we need 10 or 20 years to deal with it. Mr. Patel, I don't know, you've never missed this meeting.
I won't have a job if I miss this meeting. Mr. Chairman, I'm loath to comment on behalf of my client who represents the entirety of the banking industry in South Africa, both local and international banks with license to operate here. Suffice to say, the industry has been engaging with the DTI and the NCR as part of the process where the DTI and the NCR have been consulting industry stakeholders, and this is of course the first time that we're getting a very clear indication from the government as to what the preferred options is. So I think there's certainty around what the thinking of government is, and I think the industry would want to engage with the DTI and the NCR about the implications of not just the preferred option that's been put forward, but the other two as well. And then I think there's a number of other processes which are underway, some more advanced than others. There's an agreement that's been reached between the banks and National Treasury, specifically on the issue of unsecured lending, which has quite strong linkages with broader issues of how things like reckless lending are dealt with, consumer education and awareness when it comes to credit issues, and then also affordability assessments. And then there's two other processes which have started recently, which is a review of the credit policy white paper and amendments to the National Credit Act, which were gazetted. So I think from my client's point of view, they want to look at the impact of all of these things in its entirety. And of course, if there's going to be public hearings held by this committee, ostensibly with possibly the Trade and Industry Committee in the National Assembly, then that would be the formal process that our client would want to engage through. So I don't have any specific recommendations. I think it would be premature to put anything forward at this stage.
Am I leaving someone, anybody else who wants to say something? Okay, before Mr. McDonald, Mr. Tanja, then over to the members. Do you want to come back in a response, or you come back after members have commented? After members have commented. Honourable members, it's in Zulu we say, it's now over to you. To say what do we do with this issue which is in front of us. Once more, I want to urge, even as I've done earlier on the media, that report about this issue, talk about it, and say what the committee wants to do. Also say what the opposition says about it. Any party, DA, also say what the ANC wants to do about it. The public must have, information at its disposal of what we are saying and what we are discussing. But you have done it thus far. Honourable members? Honourable Sinclair? I don't have to write it. Only Honourable Sinclair, Honourable Van Dingen, Honourable Bell. So it will be Honourable Sinclair, Honourable Van Dingen, Honourable Bell, Honourable Nyambi, Honourable Nguni.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning. Chairperson, this as we know, it's not a very simple and straightforward matter. But this matter reminds me once again about the issue about don't kill. kill the cow because you don't like the milk. There's many arguments to this whole debate. The one issue that I'm not so certain about is the issue about the proposed regulations or criteria that will weigh the affordability and deal with that and so on. Because this is very closely linked to this whole process. But Chairperson, as I said previously in the committee, the one big issue that I'm of concern is that we once again want to improve the regulatory framework. But in terms of rolling it out, the practical reality shows otherwise. If we take the process that the NCR went through, and specifically the one regarding debt counsellors and debt counselling, there's extreme backlogs and bottlenecks in the courts at the moment. Now certainly there must be a judicial framework that you're going to deal with this. What would the department and the NCR respond to the allegations that in theory this legislation might be productive, but in reality it will just increase the frustration of another bureaucratic process that affected South Africans must go through? That's my question, Chair. Thank you.
For Lillian.
Chairperson, I nearly asked all the stakeholders that commented here this morning to repeat what they were saying so that we could take in the red light flashing. It is not as though we are against the pardon, but it's the how that goes with it. Because the people with good credit records will be in a bad spot because of this. As the lady explained there on the other side, to say that the positive and the negative information would be wiped out. But for me, there are a couple of things missing here. I have not seen the report by the actuaries. I haven't seen it. So we're talking blind here when it comes to, and we're taking this for granted, the facts that are thrown at us here. So I would like to have a view of that. And when you look at the whole credit market, it would not be nearly as bad, because this credit market and the bad debt is fueled by the informal or irregular credit advances, the ones that give you a loan and double their money before the end of the month. It's not reckless, it's the informal lenders. You can't say the bank is reckless when they know one in three loans are going fud. What you must understand is the informal market that takes your credit card and your ID book, and then they take your money before you can get to it when your paycheck comes. That's the problem. And the National Credit Regulator has been asked to do research on that, and that has not been done. Or the process might be in the process, but it's not coming to the table. And SASSA has gone into a new system where the people with the new SASSA card can now go to a preferred merchant or person where they can cash their cards or their monies, and they can go and buy food on credit with that card, and at the end of the month, they might not have any money left when on the first that money is being paid in. So here, government is encouraging reckless lending by a service provider or whatever they're being called. There are too many problems, and the National Credit Act is being amended. And as you heard from Mr. Logan, let's look at the big picture. We must not rush this. And we can't just ask for public comment for 30 days. It is not good enough. We must go beyond that. And if we want to do this, we must go the whole hog and put up the show. And and make sure we're doing the right thing. But the reports are short, they're missing. Thank you.
If we don't do 30 days, just say your suggestion, how many days?
Well, Chairperson, when we did the public hearings for the Protection of State Information Bill, we took 3 months.
Okay, that's what I wanted to hear. You know, if you're not happy with the one proposal, you can't propose. That's the nature of democracy. Honourable Bev.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to know how broadly consultation took place in the provinces and how it was done. And then also on the credit life insurance and funeral policies. So many people have more than one policy on their salary taken off, and they are not being enlightened when they actually do it, why it's taken. Maybe it should just be more boldly printed in the front page saying that this is it, and if you stop with one payment, it ceases, that they understand. Because some people think that if they take up any policy, if they are unemployed or for some other reason they cannot pay, that it's still working on. Thank you.
Hello, Leonie.
thanks, Chairperson. Let me welcome the presentation and be upfront to indicate that I'm not welcoming and celebrating that it took them some time to come back to us, because now an impression is being created as if there is this rush. That is why we always have this problem. The second thing is that when this thing was started, when we started dealing with it as a select committee, we must not lose sight of what was done when we started and who was invited and how many stakeholders were involved and why are we here now. And the third thing, Chairperson, is that I thought maybe if you have a problem with what is being presented, my understanding of this implication of the empirical presentation that is in front of us is to come with another factual counter argument that will assist us so that we must take a very responsible decision. The fourth one is that all of us in this room, we are agreeing that we do have a challenge. We have people outside that are affected. Then how do we assist them? We ask the department and NCR to come with a presentation that will assist us to take an informed decision. I want to emphasize this point, Chairperson, that let us not create an impression that we have this committee coming that want to take a reckless decision, because once you are going to make banks to collapse, it's the very same Reserve Bank that is to paid it out, and whose money is coming from the Reserve Bank. We quite understand that. And when we started this thing, I must remind members that we agreed, there's no argument that we're people that were reckless. There's no argument about it. And we've got even lenders that were reckless. There's no argument about that. So out of what has been presented, Chairperson, if I can try to reduce myself, because I was trying to remind members that we must not forget where we are coming from. And my understanding is that it took some time, and I think it was a blessing in disguise, because they were not rushing things, but they're trying to do justice, because it's not an easy presentation. Now what we are having in front of us, they've done exactly that what we asked them to do, so that we must be able to take an informed decision. We've got options. We've got option one, we've got option two, with option three, and they clarify the option. So where I'm sitting, Chairperson, I'm convinced that option two can go a long way in addressing the problem we are facing as a country, because we have that problem. And to me, that is not being reckless. And when we have to deal with the other part of engagement, or whether we have to take whatever form when dealing with it, taking forward, then we are going to deal with that, but it does not mix issues. Like Chairperson, when I'm about to conclude, I wanted you, Chairperson, to always
assist us that when we are trying to deal with this thing, now there, in the past, we argued that we are going to have a problem if we are not going to have a guideline of affordability assessment. And today we are getting it from the presentation that that has been attended to. So what becomes our problem is to focus on the options that we are having in front of us and discuss them and see what is the best. And where I'm sitting, I'm moving that let's go with option two out of the three options that has been presented to us. That is my submission for now, Chairperson, but I'll come later if there's any need. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I think Honorable Nyambi has, to some extent, covered me. But I'd like to come from the point where I speak as a layman, you know, for people that we interact with on a daily basis, you know, at our constituencies. You know, Chairperson, there are a lot of irregular things that are happening that the financial providers, the credit providers, are actually doing that are illegal. And of which an ordinary person down there is not covered. For instance, there's this what they call an in-the-blue rule, where when you borrow an amount of money, X amount of money, of which interest on that amount of X amount of money shouldn't be more than the capital money you borrowed. But you find that there are creditors who five times ask that money or take our ordinary people to the courts will repossess their position by multiplying that money five times, ten times. That's not right. And these people have got nowhere to go because it is the lawyers who enforce it. I've tried to go to the law society because I've got this type of a lawyer in my constituency. And for these people, I tried to went to go to the law society, and till today, the issue is not resolved because there are a lot of forms that I have to fill for these people to go to the law society. Now, it is a violation of the in-the-blue rule as far as I'm concerned. And then we want these people who are on the credit bureau, not for their liking. There's been a loss of jobs. People have been laid off. Now, a person, he goes and buys furniture. He takes insurance for that furniture. If he doesn't pay that amount of money or is unable to pay back the furniture shop, the insurance covers that or is covered. But when this person loses his job or her job, the furniture shop, whatever furniture shop, they repossess the furniture. What happens to the insurance thereafter? That person is being ripped off or she's being ripped off. So we cannot come here again and say that this is reckless. Okay, it is good to a certain extent reckless lending. But we need, as they said, there are two options there. Or let me say that, as we said, that there has to be education, that people must be aware that if they go into credit or they ask credit, what are the consequences and what should the qualifications for you to be given credit. On the other hand, the service providers, credit providers, they must be aware that, or they must be stick to the rules, that there must be proper assessment, that person they are giving credit, or that person who's being given credit, will be or she's be able to pay back the money. Now, the first part of it is that you find that these people, some of them, they've not been blacklisted on their own means. A person can no longer find a job because the employers, some of the employers, they reflect the credit records, you know, but you've been blacklisted as that you cannot employ you. For instance, just on Monday, I had a young guy in my office. He was employed for a week with FSB. When they find out that he has been blacklisted, he lost his job. Okay, I understand, but as FSB, you might say it deals with the financial services, of which is, we might say perhaps the position of trust, that if you are working for the FSB, you must be clean, no credit record, whatever. But I'm referring to a person who gets a job at the bank to be a teller, not to be a teller, but to be a receptionist, to be, or just a mere delivering post or so forth. That person cannot find a job, or she cannot find a job because of the credit record. Now, how do you empower people then if they cannot be given a job just because they're blacklisted? Now, in my view, it will be the responsibility of credit of providers to make sure that whoever they give credit, they follow the rules. It should also be on our people that if a person knows that she owes money, or if she knows that she earns X amount of money, he or she cannot exceed a certain limit so that he or she can live. I think we have to ensure or go and have that education in our people. And then, Chairperson, when you look at the three options that were given, the first one, it has 1.5 million people, and there's no adverse effect or impact to the people, or even to the credit providers as such. Now, the second one, there'll be some impact, but it's only to small credit providers that might close. And when you look at those credit providers, you might find that it's actually those that are loan sharks, because they don't do proper assessment that this person can afford, with affordability assessment, in my view. And the third one, of which I also want to encourage, is where a person doesn't pay at all, and he or she is being removed from the credit bureau. I think that one is a no-no, in my view, because it will be encouraging, on the other hand, you know, that culture of non-payment and so forth and so forth. But I think if you can go to option two, it should actually alleviate a lot of people, or rather help a lot of people, because if you look at the NSFAS, the students especially, like the guy I just spoke to on Monday, some of them, they owe 15,000 rand, 19,000 rand to universities. Now, if we stick it to 10,000 rand, we're not going to be able to help those people who owe 19,000 to the educational institutions. If it's open-ended, at least the person can work his way or her way of once he gets employment, how is he or he going to pay back that amount of money? And then she gets removed from the credit bureau. So I would say I really support Honorable Nyali that if we do really want to help the people, though the number is not so big, but the principle is that we'd like to help those people who are impaired, and especially the young ones, the students who have taken loans to educate themselves. Now, if we cut them from the mainstream of the economy by blacklisting them, and then what is our duty as a representative? Because I'm from a mining area, of which a lot of people have lost their jobs, and a lot of them have been blacklisted because they work on the mines, they might have closed. I'm speaking here for my constituency as such, because I work with those people on a daily basis, and I know how they suffer, mainly because of them by these emotional issues. And Chairperson, if I can just extend a little bit, you know, there was a study done by National Treasury about 4 or 5 years ago, of which they said that actually the banks themselves, the data complained that it's going to be a risk. It's only about 5% people who get credit from the banks to open businesses. 75% of the people look at their own businesses, they get from their relations, from their pensions. And 25%, rather less than 20% of those, they go to machinists, or this is credit loans. So to say that we'll be engaging in a reckless act by giving credit amnesty, I don't think really it is that much, it holds that much water, because as we talk currently, you know, the minister and the governor of the Reserve Bank, they were concerned that there might be reckless lending by the bank themselves, the African Bank, the Capitec. You know, if you read the newspapers, they're not reckless, no reckless lending. Let's take it into consideration. I think actually, on the other hand, we'll be trying to spare this economy, as we know, in a recession now. We're actually heading for the second recession. But I think if we can have this credit amnesty, at least we'll be alleviating a lot of people from poverty. The SASSA people, they must know that the card is just for them to get what the government gives them, not more than that. And the person who gives credit to the SASSA person is usually the person with the SASSA card. The person is also questionable. Why does she or she give credit to an old lady knowing that she is getting pension from SASSA? They also must act responsibly. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. But the Chief Whip raised his hand before me.
Oh, sorry. Honourable Mahindi.
Thank you, Chair. I thought you would give my courses first. Because of the respect we are having to the courses, but of course not to me. Let me just, in a minute or so, because the honourable members have raised some of the issues I wanted to raise. But Chair, I think I must upfront say I'm really rushing that we must push the bill. We can't discuss it first. We can't really deal with amnesty forever. The situation we find ourselves in, there's history to that. Unfortunately, I'm a politician, so there's political history to that. People who are blacklisted are the previously disadvantaged. And I'm not saying people should just lend money if they can't do it, if they can't retain it because they're previously disadvantaged. But from where I'm sitting, Chair, there's history and where we are coming from. That's why we are having this situation. Now, it will be very important. I must also applaud the Department of DTI for coming with mechanisms to regulate this game. Because for some time, in my view, because I'm also lending money, but I'm not saying I'm applying for amnesty.
Honourable members, I'm still chairing here.
Yeah.
I give the chance even to the Mashonis.
Mama, Chair, stop the excitement, honourable members. Now, people would recklessly borrow people money. People just, you know, there are no guidelines. The guidelines would assist because there are no guidelines. We just look at you and your salary that you get 25,000. We don't care whether that 25,000 is committed elsewhere because your salary advice is saying so as you get 25,000, people will give you a lot of money. And at the end of the day, our people are unable to then pay back this money. So, because we are in South Africa, Chairperson, we cannot, I know people would say we must not talk about it, 18 years of democracy or 19 years or so, but our history has an impact on this thing. So we've got a responsibility as public representatives to make sure that we speak on behalf of our people and try and remedy the situation. We are going to reserve, of course, I agree. We want to balance this thing. The economy must continue to be active, but it should not be at the expense of our people. I'm sure economists and so will worry much about this. My worry as a politician is that I'm elected by the people to represent them and try to liberate them from the conditions that they find themselves in. So now the conditions that our people are finding themselves in, as I've said, that the previously disadvantaged people are the most affected. So, Chair, I don't want to, we have, my other members have spoken a lot about options and option two and all of that because, and actually nobody has opposed the amnesty. In that time to move forward, Chair, I'm sure I'll be the first figure to say option two will do, and then give them, give the DTI or the CEO and her team to continue this thing. But I must say, Chairperson, that I am rushing. We have said they must come back in February. It is now May. So we must fast track the process and move. Thanks.
Oh, you want to give yourself Honourable Mahoshi?
Thank you, Chairperson. You know, technology keeps us frozen. I'm from the most remote rural area. So you pardon me.
Hey, let me just say, maybe I should preach before I speak. The word of God from the book of Psalm 63, verse 7 to 8, it says, "Shadow of your wings, I will sing for you for joy. My soul clings to you, your right hand upholds me." So people are waiting outside. They want to sing a song of joy. They want to praise their God. But then now, if we keep on delaying this process, then they won't even have a time to sing. They won't celebrate. They will keep on crying and crying and crying. So I want to say, maybe we should support these 30 days whereby we'll go out and consult with the people, do public hearing. To me, I think 30 days is a lot, many days. From the rural areas, maybe I'm coming to the solution, Chairperson. As we'll be going to the rural areas, there are indigenous, traditional leaders, and if we want to maybe talk to the people, they can gather those people in a day and we'll be able to talk to them. And in the urban areas, those people have money, they buy newspapers, they listen to the radio, they have televisions, we can broadcast that so that they come and meet with us. As I continue, I would want to say I support option two, and I even want to say we shouldn't delay this further. My colleagues have said the mouthful, so I am supporting them. Maybe Honorable St. Clair will pardon with me, because if we will promise people to keep on drinking milk, even if they are hungry, they need meat while we are having cows in the crop, we'll need to kill the cow so that the people enjoy the taste of meat. So now our people are waiting. They want this meat. And we want to then say to them, continue to drink milk. And the others are grown up. Their taste buds want salt. So we need to give them. Actually, I want to say we are very late. Maybe next week we should arrange a person and go and consult to the people. Tell them about this amnesty. And in a week's time, the department should then continue their job. We should pass the thing. People are suffering out there and they are crying. Thank you.
Honorable Adams. No, thank you, Chair. I concur with my fellow colleagues, honorable members, also with the preaching of the Honorable Jose. I want to say amen to that. But you know, Chair, I want to say also from the outset that I support option two, but I think maybe we can add one more thing in there, and that goes in with the Minister of Finance thinking about the saving culture. To bring in the culture of saving after this amnesty has been granted. So that DTI, the NCR, and all those relevant people should go out there and have workshops and roadshows about saving. Because I think if people sometimes, like the Honorable Member says, they get 25,000, now they don't budget and save properly. So I think that if we can also add this in option two as a rider in terms of the saving culture, bring it into it so that people can start, our youngsters can start growing up instead of wearing name brands and spending nearly 20,000 rand just on tires or just on the rims, to start saving and create that culture of saving and not to fall into, because debt is a spiral. It's a spiral web. It's not a cone which goes up. It's a spiral that drags you down and down and down until you are down in the pit and down. So I would support option two, Chair, but if, as the committee or the department can add another rider in there in terms of after the granting, that or during this process also, not just after the grant, but during this process, getting and teaching into the way and culture of savings as the finance minister's thinking is at the moment. From Mama Gogo to Mahosh in the rural area to the Republic of the Western Cape, right down to the Eastern Cape, all over, we should get that culture in of saving. Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. You know, for me, pardon, I did some informal English. It was informal. Even the Afrikaans that I did, it was informal. Even the arithmetic that I did, it was informal. Then it turned into Rekenkende. So that was the system. And that system was just not an event, that it came in 1948 and the event went on, it was finished. No. It was a system that was there, properly designed to marginalize certain people, economically, politically, and otherwise. Well, that's the system. And it had its own production. It did not end there. That's why I would want to remind people that 1994 did not bury this animal. Still there. Why we have some of these problems today, it is because of that system. Whether we like it or not, you can say it otherwise. But I, as a victim, and many others, know that it is because of that system. You know, last weekend, we had asked members to engage on this issue in their constituencies. And last weekend, when I was back, I engaged my friends and colleagues around Bangeni, professionals, teachers, and so on. We're just talking about this issue. Most of them were saying, we are sick and tired of getting these credit cards. Even financial institutions, they just post credit cards. All you need to do is just to sign. You have got 50,000 rand. You have money that you don't have. Now imagine that is one bank. Another one gives you another credit card. One guy said he has got 3 credit cards from banks. Now he has got 150,000 all of a sudden that he must use. And nobody out of this bank ever thought of his financial condition. That is reckless. So the argument really that people just go there and borrow money, there are people that go there and borrow money reckless. But what we want to stress is that even financial institutions are reckless in their behavior and in their conduct. The second issue on this issue is that when we deal with this issue, I personally have said, I see the consumers only being punished by being blacklisted. The service provider, he knows that Kamede cannot afford. He's only left with about 4,000 in his. Then they juggle figures, they do things, and they give him 100,000. And he is never punished. It's never blacklisted. But what is now coming with this research is that the service providers now will be dealt with. So it's just a cycle that they continue blacklisting people, and this blacklisting is used now as a tool. You know, some people phone, say, hey, you pay this, and I'll blacklist you. It's not correct. This is not what we wanted about blacklisting or whatever. One mistake happened, because it's good to speak of experiences. One of my other sons, not the one that is here, at one stage bought a car, and they looked at his financials, and he was supposed to take an insurance cover for the car. Then they asked him, do you have a father or a mother who can assist you with this? And he said, I've got a father. Oh, a very good father. Do you know his details? They just wrote my details and so on. And he didn't tell me that he was taking insurance. And I'm so democratic because of 1994. Because I send my children with my cards and everything. I don't go to banks. So I give them everything, accounts and so on. And he got the insurance for the car. After a few months, I get a phone call. Yeah, you're not paying for this insurance. Oh, it's not an insurance. It was
this thing, matrix, these devices for tracing cars. Yeah. I said, no, I never dealt with this company in my whole life. They said, no, we have your name here, we are blacklisting you. I said, hey, go on. Then they blacklisted me. Then I lodged an objection, because I know I can lodge an objection, but millions don't know. When I submitted all the proof, they then apologized and removed me, because I did not give authority to my son. It's a company that I've never dealt with, and I've never dealt with. So such things do happen. That is why we say the situation there outside is not the same. What the experience that we have, more especially as Honorable Nyame said, the previously disadvantaged, some of our colleagues don't have that experience. I was told by my father that they were not allowed to have credit cards before. It was a preserve of a certain few. When I asked him, but why I have a credit card now and you don't have it? He said, no, that thing we're not allowed to have. So you go, then go to the Mashonisa. So these are the things that we are trying to address on this issue. We don't want to be reckless. The Credit Act itself and the NCR, yeah.
So I just forgot. I just have to ask the banks. You know, there is what they call securitization of the things. Now, when I asked the former Reserve Governor President, he don't want to know. It's nice the banks clean their books. But I said, you know, what is happening in America, you know, when there was a few crisis, it's because they were lending people houses, they were doing this houses, and then they securitize them, and that's why they were in the trouble. No, but it's good because the banks are down, they clean their books. No, 2 years down the line, he said to me, no, all the banks must not disclose what they've securitized. Now, what securitization is that a bad debt is repackaged and sold to investors by the banks. What do the banks call that? Why is it not reckless lending? Because securitization is, in a way, reckless lending, and they are ripping off giants because they are selling them bad debt on the other hand. I just want to notify the banks. It's just that, unfortunately, Kafka Kavuta is not here because he's vehemently against this credit amnesty. Thanks, Chair.
No, don't worry. He's here. He's represented here. But thanks very much. But I'm quite happy when we discuss. All what we need to do is when we discuss issues, we must be open and we hear all the sides and be honest about it. And we must not prejudge that so-and-so is saying this because of this. We must just put the facts on the table. These are the facts. This is what we want to do. This project, we didn't start this year or last year. We started it that year. So it has been for some time. And as some members say, we gave a deadline February, we couldn't meet. The department said it's still busy. It's looking at this report from the research. So it's a process. We agree that we must do some public hearings. That's okay. In actual fact, most members have done more than 20 hearings, you know, in communities. I've invited the NCR, the department, to attend. They do attend. Just to explain these things, because just for people to get information. Let me repeat the example I said a few years ago. To those who did not hear it. There was a strike in one university and the students were striking because the administration fee was from 4,000 to 5,000. So they do it. Then one leader, because I'm afraid of name dropping, one leader went there and then said, then wanted to find out what was happening there. And then the students said, no, they're increasing our fees. And then they were asked, who is paying this money? Are you paying this money or your parents are paying this money? They said, our parents are paying this money. Then the question was, do you know that this 4,000 is far cheaper than ignorance? It's far cheaper than not having information. And it's far cheaper than not having education. So you take the 5,000 now, it's very cheap. You don't finish your degree, you'll see in later life how expensive it is. So this is what we are trying to address. The situation that we face, the decisions that we take today are not for today,
or tomorrow. They are also for the future, just like the decisions that were taken in 1948. So we're trying to address that. Mr. McDonald.
No, I wanted to say something. To say, you as the bank, you are Mr. Kuvadia, Kassel, whatever. I heard him saying that he was consulted representing the bank to a person. But as for now, he is choosing not to say anything. There is a process at the Department of the National Treasury that is taking place. I hope I know that process. So if someone in court is asked, what do you say? And somebody remains silent, there is an expression that says, in simple English, don't scream if an adverse inference is taken against you now, because you are not saying anything. So I propose that the committee will make our presentation. People were consulted. Indirectly, I'm responding to who did you consult? We consulted Barca. We consulted the by the response from the credit bureaus. The response was very outstanding and we appreciate that. However, as to the process with the National Treasury, it should not be conflated with this process. It should not be conflated with the process. The two departments are still talking behind the scenes. I hope he is talking about the twin peak issue. We have views, but we don't want to conflate the two processes. And then we encourage the committee, maybe the chair, to confer with his counterpart in the Political Portfolio Committee of the Department of Finance on this issue. It's called the Twin Peak, because these are political issues. But I'm not invited here to talk for or against. So therefore, we are saying, please move to a conclusion on the matter what we have in the hand, but not to conflate issues that are still being debated behind the scenes. Thanks.
Is there any follow-up or comment on our funding?
Chairperson, we are here because of the 2007 amnesty and its failure. The figures from the Credit Bureau Association show that a large percentage of the credit granted in that amnesty came from unregulated sections, and therefore the people lost the protection of the Act. The default of the 2007 amounted to 33 billion and 14 billion in judgment. Now, I'm asking you, what has the credit regulator done to educate the people since then? Because we're back there. We're sitting with no training, no education, and there's no guidance from their department or side since 2007 to make things better for the consumers on the ground. And this crisis that we have at the moment, we mustn't stare ourselves blind to where we want to go with this. This, the lady from the National Credit Regulator said there are 19 million consumers in the market. 19 million. And we want to address the situation for those that are blacklisted or in a bad spot, 1.5 to 2 million people. But we don't want to put a limit on that amount, because that's what your proposal says. Now, that's a Casatu proposal that says 200,000 and so on. So I'm asking, where is the
I'm giving a lot of blame to the credit regulator. I'm also giving a lot of blame to law enforcement. Why is there no proper law enforcement in this situation? And then I agree with you. The real problems come from when people want to buy things. And then the onus is placed, the ownership of the debt is placed on the consumer and not the retailer. And that's where the irregularities come in of high interest rates, etc., etc. We can mention the two cases, for instance, that came up at Marikana. But now, we now making an extreme effort to accommodate a small portion of the market, and we're ignoring the other 17 million that will be discredited in this situation, because they have built up a good credit record. And Chairperson, you must not for one minute think that all these people are in the lower income group. They vary, because we now say, irrespective of the value. So we're doing a cross-section of the market. And there are 17 million people who have built up a good credit record with banks. And we're now annihilating the cons, the pros for those people. Then, in that proposal, the power that's given to the minister through a mere regulation is far too free. And I see that SASSA is, the GTI is talking about the bill that is coming. It has come onto the list of bills before Parliament, and it is listed as a private member's bill. Is it a private member's bill, or is it a government bill? And this morning, signed the 5th of June, the list, it says National Credit Act Amendment Bill, and it is listed as a private member's bill. So I'm asking, is it a private member's bill? And then, when it comes to the SASSA cards, it still has to do a lot with loan sharks, because at 1 o'clock in the morning, you will find people at the ATMs, at the banks, with credit with the SASSA cards and the ID books and the PIN numbers, and they are drawing money. So you want to tell me it's an agreement between the loan shark or the person who lends them the money and the client. This is what we're talking about. This is what the Act is all about. This is what the amnesty is all about. And we are destroying the credit ratings of 17 million people. We must be very careful how we approach this. Thank you.
Just, I'm coming to you, Honourable. There's just a point of correction, so that it's not 17 million. There are 19 million active, you know, consumers, but more than 10 million are impaired. So it's the majority. More than 10 million are impaired, and their records being impaired. So it's actually dealing with the majority. Also, with the SASSA cards, I think they are different. I think you can hear me what I'm saying. Then you can say they are not. With the SASSA cards, those are not credit cards. Those are your normal, what can you call them, debit cards, sort of. Because only when they have money, when they've been paid, they can use that. If they use money on outside of that amount which is there, then someone else is doing something wrong. They can't utilize more than what is there in the card. It's their salary. I mean, it's not their salary, but it's their payment. They can only use that. Well, I'm sure we can follow it up after that.
Chairperson, I want to appeal. I want to raise this point of order. It does never mean that when Honorable Van Lingen is making an input, he's always assisting us. But we decide to keep quiet because we respect each other. Mm-hmm. And we are trying to address us and correct something as a chairperson as an intervening in disturbing. I find that to be quite very disturbing. So I'm raising a point of order that listening is a skill. That is why when you talk about even when they presented the more than 10 million that are impaired,
listening is a skill. So let's respect each other. When somebody is on the floor, let's keep quiet. If you've got a different view, you'll raise your hand, a chairperson will recognize you.
Okay, accepted. Honorable Sinclair, and then Honorable Dikhane, then after that I'll hand over this side for comment.
Yes, I raised the issues during my initial input regarding the ability of the various judicial instruments, the courts, to deal with it. And I didn't get the response to this because it's quite a crucial process that needs to be followed. So maybe if the department can't respond, maybe some of the other people, the NCR, can respond to that. But linked to that, Chair, is the issue about your noble plea. And we hear your noble plea about a just and fair society striving to establish a big middle class and so on. But if we then decide to go that route and say, right, let's have and seriously engage on this matter of credit amnesty, why wouldn't we then consider a process of, if you like, the TRC of credit indebtedness? Why don't we then go for the process to say, let's agree it's a serious, serious issue in our society? I mean, you've quoted the figures and the ones that affect. And if you look at that figures, it's got a serious impact on the potential of South Africa to grow a solid and strong economic middle class. And in terms of that, then I would suggest that in terms of these options, let's build in a process where you develop a framework where people that's credit in that's touched by this whole event or that's got an impact on them, let them go through the various processes and declare, but this is my situation and I want to rectify it. And then get to the point where we can address these issues that you so aptly motivate. The last issue, Chair, is the issue about the various options. Now, the department motivated in their correspondence that they believe option one is maybe the way to go. It seems that there's a collective feeling of the powers of the day to say rather option two. Option two has got very draconic suggestions and proposals. I mean, if you look at the first one, the removal of all adverse information listing, irrespective of value and irrespective of non-payment. Now, once again, and that's where I think the Honorable Van Langen wanted to make the point to say, let's have a balanced approach in dealing with this. The issue that I want to raise, Jay, is that there's a differentiation in terms of how, in terms of the legal process, they deal with it. I mean, if you've got a high court judgment, I think it takes 30 years, or it stands on your record for 30 years. So maybe we can get clarity on that. Because if we say removal of all adverse information and removal of all paper and so on, then certainly it's going to have an impact on also very serious issues like defaulting on home bonds and home loans and all those type of things. So what I want to plead to, I hear that we must now slaughter the cow to drink the milk and all those things, but we must be, the reality is that we must be responsible and we can't rush this. So if we then agree, let's start with a clean slate, let's do it in a proper fashion. But I must say the responses that I got from the very learned Mr. McDonald, Mr. Tenzi, he didn't respond to my question. Thank you.
Yeah, he has acknowledged that they are going to respond now to you. I like your comments. They are constructive and forward moving. It shows that if I cut you, you have some blood in you. Honorable Dikhane.
Thank you, Chairperson. Honourable member from the department, pardon me,
I want to ask this question. Who is benefiting if the names of the people are in the credit bureau? Just want to know that. And then if nobody benefits, then we need to keep on and follow option two, because it is saying removal of all paid up access information listing on an ongoing basis, and the other one says removal of all paid up judgments on an ongoing business basis. It's like all the people who will then be removed from the credit bureau must then pay their debts before they can be removed. Is that so? So I think here people will benefit. The companies, furniture shops, and even the people whom their names will be then be removed from the credit bureau, they will also benefit. To me, even though today is not Sunday, I think the only place where there's no reverse is in hell. But here, we can make a reversal. We can go on with this amnesty and the people will then gain. And even the company will then gain. I don't know what is happening with the opposition today, because to me it seems like they don't want this amnesty to continue. If I'm wrong, then they will pardon me. But I think we need to continue with this. And if I was a chairperson of this committee, I would say next week we are starting with the public hearing. Thank you.
Thanks, Honorable Dikhar, but Honorable Funding said they're not opposed to the amnesty, it's only the how. Oh, you are. That's what you said earlier on. You said, but the how. Then my apologies if you didn't say so. I withdraw that. Now, let me give it to the department, or we'll start to the NCR and then Mr. McDonald. Mr. Masha.
Thank you, Honorable Gamet. I just wanted to comment on a few issues that were raised, and my comments are purely to clarify those issues. The first one relates to the impact of the 2007 credit amnesty. From what I hear, it seems that the issue being raised is these people who benefited from that amnesty became over indebted again because of the amnesty. As the NCR and also speaking for the DTI, we believe that view is inaccurate. We believe that, you know, 2 years immediately before the implementation of the National Credit Act, there was a surge, an unhealthy surge in credit extensions. Credit providers were extending credit robustly at an increasing rate in anticipation of the tightening of the lending criteria with the National Credit Act implementation. And secondly, we believe that the 2008 and 2009 global financial crisis also had an impact on our people. They lost jobs and they couldn't pay their debts. And of course, also we also believe that reckless lending also played a part in making our people over indebted. We have seen this through the analysis of the affordability assessments that were done by the NCR, that there are major shortcomings regarding the way in which affordability assessments are done. They are not done properly. And I think these reasons are also detailed in the full report that was submitted to this committee. And then the CCA raised this issue of the percentage of the discretionary income that should be left for consumers in our affordability assessment guideline. The problem that we want to address through this is we have realized that many credit providers are lending to the maximum of the consumer's discretionary income. So if the consumer has 3,000 rand left, you know, after paying the taxes and all the necessary living expenses, we have extreme cases where credit providers will lend up to the last 79 cents. So the consumer will literally be left with 79 cents And as a result of that, if there are any unexpected changes in the consumer's financial situation, those will not be catered for. And we believe that it is the right guideline that should be implemented. But we are open to engagement, but as the regulator, we want to make sure that there is a cushion for the consumer in case there are unexpected changes in their financial position. Regarding the timelines, the consultation timelines, we believe that they were sufficient. Consultations, as the DTI and the regulator, commenced in August last year. Now it's 9 months down the line, and the amnesty has not been implemented. And we must remember what the primary objectives of the amnesty are. We want people to get cheaper credit. Those who are struggling to find employment, we want to help them, and they can't wait any longer, the way we see it. We also have people who cannot find rental accommodation because of these listings. And if we delay far too long, these people will continue to suffer when there is an intervention that can be made at this time. The backlogs in the courts, we, as the NCR, we have been going to the magistrates' courts across the country. We've spoken to magistrates. They don't have backlogs. We don't know where this information comes from. As far as the magistrate that we have spoken to, they say they don't have backlogs. And then the bad debts being influenced by informal lenders. I think we want to place on record that reckless lending is across the board by credit providers in all sectors. The cases that we have referred to the National Consumer Tribunal is against micro lenders and also banks. Thank you, Jefferson.
CEO, before we
thank you, Chair. I think most of the questions that were asked have been responded to by our company secretary. But I think suffice it to say, I just want to confirm exactly what you said. We've been, around the country. We've had sessions with magistrates, and they have indicated that they don't have backlogs. I think there may be delays in some courts because, you find in one court sometimes, different magistrates in one town have different requirements in terms of submission of documents. But other than that, they don't have backlogs. So we really don't know where that information, comes from. Thank you.
Donald,
no, thanks. Through you, maybe you can also allow the consultant. I know that you are still being there, but when I responded, I wanted...
If you could allow me, let me allow the Vita to say something because I want it to be the last one.
Honourable Chair, there are quite a few points that I'd like to just address and touch on. It seems like there may be confusion as to what data removal is being spoken of. The credit bureaus store 4 types of credit information. The payment profile information shows what has been paid for every line of credit. So, for example, if a person has an Edgar's and an African Bank and a Capitec Bank, those 3 accounts, on for 24 to 36 months, depending on the credit bureau, that information is stored as to whether or not payment was made on a monthly basis. So you have 24 or 36 payment indications. We're not touching that information. That information is sacrosanct in a way because it's crucial for pricing of credit. And so we don't believe that that information should be changed in any way. That's called payment profile or account history information, and that's critical to the scorecards. The next information is called adverse information, and that is when, following non-payment, which is reflected in the payment profile, it goes into a public record portion of the credit record, which is available to all credit providers. And that adverse listing is what is famously called either bad debt written off or handed over or card revoked. It shows either subjective opinion, like a bad payer or absconded, or it means that there's an enforcement type of action, which is like written off or handed over. Now, that is what we are talking about removing. There are 2 other kinds of information on the credit record that are negative, and that is judgment information. That is where a court has made an order compelling payment. Now that information we're not talking about removing unless payment of the account has been settled. Where the account is paid, we want to incentivize the payment so that we give a reason to consumers to pay that judgment debt so that it stays on for not longer than the payment. At the moment, you have to wait 5 years, irrespective of payment of the judgment, before the judgment information is removed. What we are talking about is incentivizing consumers to make payment by saying, as soon as payment is made, we will remove the judgment. And then the last type of information that we're not removing is notices which relate to debt counseling, administration, sequestration, or rehabilitation. And those, for more complicated reasons, are not possible to just remove and would also relate to very high-risk cases because, as you can imagine, most people who are sequestrated, that's a lot of money that's been owed. Mm-hmm. So what we are proposing here is a very limited intervention. It will benefit 1.6 million people. It's a huge number of people. But it will benefit them not only with regards to getting credit, but with also with regards to getting employment and other things which credit scores or credit records are used to vet and filter people's applications for various things. The last thing I want to mention is that a point was made by the Credit Bureau Association that the removal of adverse information and the example taken from Brazil is not a good example, and it's not analogous to our situation, and we shouldn't be looking at the Brazilian procedure or what they do, their practice. And the reason that was brought forward was that they only have negative information. We have positive and negative information is what was argued. And I think holds no water whatsoever, because the whole idea is we have a comprehensive data set. Okay, we've got a lot of payment information that's recorded in the payment profile that shows that people have made payment. Now, why on earth would that be negative? This actually shows both positive and negative information. So it can't be used as an argument against removing some negative information. In Brazil, they only have negative information and they still remove it. We have both, and we want to remove a tiny portion of the information. And we think that that would be responsible, would have very little impact on creditors' portfolios. I just want to underline that there's been a lot of consultation. We've met with the Credit Providers Association. We've met with the Credit Bureau Association, not once, many times. We've met with the Banking Association of South Africa. We've met with the Microfinance South Africa. We've met with the Reserve Bank. We've met with every major regulator. And consequently, we believe this is a very responsible initiative that is being presented.
Thanks very much. You close this, Mr. Netizenza. But I'm happy that you are also dealing with the issue of garnishee orders, that you are dealing with them. This has been a pain in the neck for people. Is it you, see? Oh, Mr. Masha? Oh, okay. And then you close.
Thank you, Chairperson. I really appreciate the opportunity. I just wanted to respond to two issues that were raised. This way about education and enforcement of the National Credit Act. On the educational side, the NCR embarked on a series of a program of educating people countrywide. We have utilized various methods and tools to reach out to people. We have utilized TVs and so on. We even participated in a Soul City project, a SOP called Soul City, that was flooded on TV, which was talking NCR relevant messages. We have been involved with various registrations, not only nationally, but also community registrations. Print media as well, we utilized that extensively and got mileage out of that. We formed partnerships with the likes of your controller, which enabled us to reach out to the rural and so forth. We have erected billboards in various provinces. We started with KZN, Gauteng, Northwest, and Limpopo. And this we're talking about debt cancelling issues. That's how people should come out of
that are trapped and what needs to be done. We've conducted various workshops for consumers countrywide and so forth through the offices of the premiers and so forth. And not only that, but we have also engaged the credit providers themselves. We have had several meetings and engagements with CEOs of the banks and various credit providers, retailers and so forth, the likes of MFSA, for example, so that they can carry out the messages throughout their institutions. We have also partnered with the Consumer Provincial Affairs Offices of the respective provinces, which are very effective in reaching out to the people that are on the ground. On the enforcement side, I must emphasize the fact that we take enforcement of this particular piece of legislation very seriously, because it goes to the core of addressing the real issues. As the NCR, we have conducted raids in various provinces. We have raided, credit providers in KZN. We've been here in the Western Cape, the Dunes and so forth. We've been to the Northwest in Marikana. We have recently gone to Limpopo in the Venda area. And as we're talking now, we are in the Northern Cape in Upington. And I can maybe disclose the fact that on Tuesday in the CBD, about 4,500 cards were retrieved from trade providers operating in that particular area. And the saddest thing is that over 1,000 of these cards, some of them were SASA cards, and of deceased people. Now you can imagine money being transferred into deceased accounts, and some credit providers continue to draw, those particular grants. It's pathetic, it's terrible, but however, we're on top of our game, and this is continuing. People have been arrested, we're taking people to court, we're partnering with the National Prosecuting Authority of South Africa, the Commercial Crimes, and I think we've been very, very effective. Reckless lending, you have read in the newspapers, we don't discriminate. Microlenders, big trade providers alike are being treated the same, and we won't hesitate or apologize about taking them to the National Consumer Tribunal and asking for fines where reckless lending is identified. Garnishee orders are a problem. We are embarking on a massive investigation scale relating into this particular issue, because the very same trade providers that we're talking about are utilizing this form of collection to abuse people, to the detriment of the people. So we are putting in resources into this. We're going to deal with it effectively so. Securitization indeed is a problem, and we are focusing on it together with prescribed debt. And pretty soon I think we're going to bear fruit, and then we will be coming out publicly about our success in the nation. Thank you, Chairman.
Mr. Tenda, are you done? That's right, Mr. Tenda.
No, thanks. thanks, Chair, and the honourable members and colleagues. mine is just to say, if this project is implemented, individuals will benefit. The credit providers will benefit because people will be in circulation and being economically active. Therefore, the economy will become vibrant. So, three issues: the individual, the credit providers, and the economy will benefit. And then, in conclusion, I would like to thank my team members, and then the one at the back who never uttered any words. And then, just to say, to plead now, his name is Potwana, he was not here when we were articulating our names. Finally, to say, we encourage or we plead that this House adopt the options as they deem fit. Ours is a proposal, but somebody has to take a decision. We can't take a decision. We put everything there. Take a decision. That is your area of competence. Thank you.
Thank you. There was a proposal and seconded for the second option. Is there any counter proposal? Because that I didn't hear any. Honorable Fandini?
Chairperson, we were asked to look at the bigger picture and wait till the Credit Act and everything else is in place before we just accept this in the committee. And further, I request that we also debate the report in the NCLP.
Which report? Yeah, maybe Honorable Maine and Yambi will put me on the rail.
Well, sir, this thing, as it says, I think you are right, sir, that the majority of the members has moved to adopt the presentation, and particularly emphasize that we go with option two. So nobody has counteracted that. So if, as you said, there's nobody opposing it, it means we have all agreed that option two will do. Unless somebody says no, I oppose completely, or option one or three. I think that's the route you must take now. Thanks, sir.
Honorable Nyambi, then, Honorable Nyambi, do you want to follow up on the funding? Yeah.
I object completely.
I'm sure you object. I don't have to hear that. I see that. Honorable Nyambi?
Chair, I'm trying to be clarified from what you're asking us to do. We've come a long way with this, and it must be clear because we are not playing, we're serious. So, with due respect, it has to be on record that Honorable Van Lingen is objecting, whether it's objecting option two or it's objecting credit amnesty. Let it be clear so that we can have a better understanding. But there's nothing wrong, it's their right to do that. But now we're missing what is it that is being objected.
Sorry, Honorable Sinclair, I didn't see you.
Yeah. Say I was positive to consider option two, but I heard something that Mr. Netsatenzi said that made me very concerned. Mr. Netsatenzi presents this as a magic wand that will be the solution of our economic ills that we're going through at the moment. It can't be. This is just one small element of maybe a bigger picture. So certainly to consider this credit amnesty won't be the only solution to the difficulties that we're going through in South Africa at the moment. There's many other elements, as you know. In terms of the position that my party and I take on this, we abstain for the moment. You know what is my viewpoint on this matter? If we start with the new process, then let's go the full mile and start with a clean slate and go through other processes also. But I still don't get the clarity about why did the department propose number one and now suddenly they say no vote as you deem fit. That one I don't understand.
Yeah, before I give you, but normally if there are issues in the committee and we ask the departments to do some work, they come and they come with a recommendation. It is only us that take decisions. So they might see it this way, just like having what you are saying, TRC or a Commission of Inquiry. It will do its work and come with a recommendation, but a decision still has to be made. So that TRC, I'm sure, I thought you said you'll go to court and do this thing, but it's better with the TRC, but it's an option, but unfortunately we've got different views, but I respect your position. Now he's asking me, you're not speaking on him?
Sir, I think it's improper of you to want to give your assistant to speak. You can't clarify why they said option one. It is written here, and it isn't presented, so we can't go further. We are now at the point where we are saying
option 3 or 1 or 4. That's where we are. And we have said option 2.
You know, Mr. Nitty, that is why we have whips in committees. They put us into order, into line. So that we have done. So we want to go back to you. Honorable Beth.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to second Honorable Lillian. Thank you.
On the opposing what? Opposing option 2 or 1 or 3 or everything that is this animal called amnesty.
Chairperson, would there be another opportunity for other options, because now you guys are asking option 1 or option 2?
No. You know, a presentation has been made with the recommendation. It has been made by the department. I don't know. You know, there's something I wanted to ask before, whether the department, you remember when we were dealing with the state information bill, you go through this process of even visiting caucuses of parties, even though also at the end they'll oppose it, but you go through that process. I wanted to check if we shouldn't go that route also, whether it would be possible for NCR and the department also to visit caucuses of parties, just to explain this thing, where they are comfortable, raise issues, their opinion, and so on. I wanted to, but maybe we'll talk about it. What I'm trying to say here, Beth, is that the presentation has been made with options. Ours was to edge on the options or subtract and then take the option that we feel we want to decide on. So if there was an option that you wanted to add, it was today.
Chairperson, I've asked for the actuary's report, and nobody is hearing what I'm asking for. It also refers to 8.2.3 or something of another report, which I haven't seen either. So if I can get those reports, then we can talk. But then, why must this issue be forced through before the Credit Act is properly through Parliament? It's not going to take that long. It's got to go. We must look at the big picture. And that is what I propose we do. And that is what my colleague seconded.
You know, when you deal with an act, why the Credit Act is coming is because there are certain amendments. So we're saying let's deal with this issue so that if there are any amendments, they'll come in the basket when it is coming. But when there's an issue that we've got to deal with, the normal process is we deal with it here, we pass it, then we take it, as you requested, to the House for a debate. For instance, we can't take this issue in the House if we don't have recommendations and we haven't adopted it here. We need to adopt it here, then we can have a debate. Usually we would have a statement, but in this case we would have a debate because you have requested it, that we have a debate. When the National Credit Act comes, it will come doing its own thing. It's not because the Credit Act is coming because of the credit amnesty. Something else. Honorable Nyambi, I really want to close this.
Before you close the chair, it's better for us to expose some of the things that are happening in this meeting, because we are listening and we are following what is happening. When option 2 was seconded, to indicate that it was not even more about party line, we have Honorable Adams that seconded option 2 and made a rider to make a decision. And now as a chairperson, you are dealing with Honorable Abrahams to say, what is it that you are seconding? And she has got that right to respond to your question. But it's clearly in front of you being undermined by the person that's supposed to be seconded and clarifying what is it that she must second. How can that be possible? And when I made an appeal earlier on that we have this challenge and where we are coming from, trying to give the context and the background of why we are here, and now there's nothing wrong, we are entitled to your right to oppose. Honorable Sinclair was very clear. I'm abstaining. And for Honorable Van Lingen to oppose,
There's nothing wrong to say, I am opposing credit amnesty. There's nothing wrong with it. We have to have that on record. But even if you had another rider of a different option, you have that right. But now that is not coming out clearly. And as somebody who's part of this meeting, the more it's getting in to oppose, is the more I get confused. And I, with due respect, assist us to understand, if you've got a problem with credit amnesty, say it so, so that we can just conclude the meeting, Chair.
Good. Have you covered?
Chairman, I've got, but then I just want to say, perhaps that you know, get my friend along. Perhaps if there is a letter of your support, if they get the department can avail it, if there is. And then I just want to find out from the department whether this amendment of the Credit Act has it got a directional bearing to the credit amnesty, or will the credit amnesty have an effect on this envisaged credit act the honourable member is holding on, saying no, but we cannot before we get the credit act. Thanks, Chairman. I'm just being liberal to take our colleague along.
Honourable members, let's be in order. You know, this thing is in the process. There are stages that go, there are things that we decide, that we recommend. We're still going to go a long way with this issue. The report that you talk about, you must remember that it was in the House where I was even speaking, and I asked the minister, please do something about this credit amnesty. From there, the minister approached the relevant section, and then they approached the NCR. From there, the NCR did some research. Now, all this thing has to go back. The minister still also has to report to cabinet that this is now what has happened, this is what the committee says must happen, and this is the report. Maybe it's the report that the honorable funding wants. Then after that, when it comes to cabinet, from cabinet, we are going to deal with that. As soon as what I want to request here from the department, on the very same day that the report is tabled in the cabinet, can you please get it on that day so that we give it to members? That report is coming on our funding. As soon as, in a very few short weeks, it will be in the cabinet, from cabinet to us. We are not cabinet, we are the legislature. So it is coming. I don't want to take it. I want to take it that 5 members have proposed and seconded that we take option 2. One member is abstained. We know his position. And 2 members have opposed. We will take it that way, that opposed. We don't want to read this thing about opposing it in the newspapers. They oppose 1, 2, and 3 because we didn't hear it in the meeting.
Do I understand you correctly? The report that you're talking about has relevance to the decision that we are expected to take here today, but it has not been served before cabinet, and cabinet has not taken a decision. Am I understanding you correctly? And is that the report by the actuaries, or is that a different report?
Any report that is in the cabinet will be coming to this committee. What we are doing is our job of what we are doing right now. How the cabinet responds, because it responds, it has got its own thing. They might come up with certain recommendations. This is how things function. We say this, this is what we do. When it comes to cabinet, we're still going to have a meeting. I hope this is loud and clear. But do you want to engage the department and NCR as caucuses, especially the opposition parties? Yeah.
Chairperson, where is the report by the actuary and the other report? Are you saying both reports are in front of cabinet and they still have to take a decision? Because then this meeting to me does not make sense.
Yeah, I'm afraid, you know, I must call you into order. You know, committees of parliament do not function waiting for cabinet. We are separate body, we are a separate structure, we deal with issues that are before committees of parliament. We are a legislature, and that is the executive. And we don't wait for executive, we don't do wait and not do things because executive has to do something. No, that is not how it happens. The issue is all the reports that are to be made available will be made available. For this day, for the record, for this meeting, the majority of members have said on the presentation, the option two would be preferred. We note the opposition of the DA, and we note COPE is abstaining on this matter. Thank you very much. Other than that, I want to thank the department, the NCR. I'm still going to engage with all of you. I still have meetings with two universities in KwaZulu-Natal. To engage with students about credit amnesty, though I will get some facts, so I will invite you. To everybody, thanks very much for being here. The meeting stays adjourned.
We must join the Brazilians.